The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Cameron Hill, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Cameron from Off the Ball is going to tell me about a record that has stood the test of time, almost 40 years. But first of all, we're going to talk about milers.
Because 2 days ago, May 6th, was the anniversary of Roger Bannister doing the unthinkable, running a sub-4-minute mile. It had thought that it would never be possible by humans. And he was a medical student at the time in Exeter College, Oxford. But his track record spoke for itself, so to speak. So he broke the record for the 1,500 metres at the 1952 Olympics in Helsinki, coming fourth, and then won gold in the 1954 European Championships in Bern. But he wanted to take on this challenge up until the day of.
Now, you have to think of it in terms of, you know, breaking the 10 seconds for 100 metres, for example. It's that kind of unthinkable, which is now routine. As we know, breaking the 4-minute mile is pretty routine. What about on the day itself?
Yeah, so he was reluctant to take part in the attempt on the day because he cited winds of up to 25 miles per hour on the track. His friend had to come up to his dorm to convince him, and it was up until a half an hour beforehand that he was still getting cold feet, but he eventually arrives on the track and, as luck would have it, the wind died down. So at 6 o'clock, he began his attempt on the Iffley Road at Oxford, which is the athletics track there, a track he actually helped to lay. So another interesting link to that. And there were four teams he was racing against throughout. And Norris McVerter was the timekeeper for the attempt. He would later go on to co-edit the Guinness Book of World Records.
With his brother. McVerters, yeah.
And once Bannister crossed the finish line, McVerter announced the time. He only got as far as 3 before
that meant
a huge,
it was not that was 4 minutes.
It was done. They knew. The crowd just wouldn't let him finish, and that was evidence enough that he'd broken the record.
Now, I've seen pictures of Bannister after that, and he collapsed. You know, he's absolutely in total bits.
Yeah, there's actually footage of it online, and you can the commentators keep talking about his spindly legs and how he's able to do this, which is an interesting observation on their part. They've obviously never seen a runner before, but he came to resent the fact that he was only known for this. He gave up running at the age of 25, so later that year, believing he wouldn't be taken seriously as a doctor. And he wanted to be remembered for his work as a neurologist. Some of his experiments, he self-experimented a lot with often very strange results. And when he met his future wife, she knew he was a runner, but didn't know what he was famous for, or got confused because she thought he'd run 4 miles in a minute.
Okay. Well, I presume they went on to live a long and happy life in ignorance together. Now, the one we want to talk about, though, is a mile record, but a mile record with a difference.
Yeah. So in 1985, John O'Shea had an idea. He travelled to Zurich in August of that year.
Is John O'Shea the founder of Goal?
Yes, correct. And this was around, so this is 1985. So this is at the height of sort of the Live Aid and Band Aid, everyone doing their bit for charity to help various different causes. So he goes to Zurich in August of that year and is hoping to convince three of Ireland's greatest ever long distance runners. That's Ray Flynn, Frank O'Mara and Marcus O'Sullivan to join Eamon Coughlin, who he'd yet to convince, for a world record attempt for the men's 4x1 mile relay at UCD.
OK, so each one of them would run a mile, handing the baton to the other and carry on and see how quickly they could do 4 miles effectively.
Yeah.
So what do the lads think?
They weren't massively impressed with the idea. So Frank O'Mara said in a piece with the Examiner a couple of years ago that it was at the peak of their season and this kind of sounded like a circus. You only get 10 to 15 races a summer to make hay, and it's not easy to give up one to be part of John's endeavour. And Coughlin had another issue. He was coming back from injury and didn't want to run the risk of a setback in his recovery because, you know, a professional athlete, particularly on track, they don't, as Frank O'Mara said, have loads of opportunities. It's not match after match. They've only a finite amount per year. But Coughlin explained to me earlier this week that O'Shea, shall we say, had a particularly effective power of persuasion.
John O'Shea, a great friend, a great humanitarian, and a great bully. John didn't ask you to run in the race. John told you you were going to run in the race. I wasn't in any kind of shape to run, so I said no. So John O'Shea insisted that I run, and I said no, John. And he turned around to me on the phone, that is, and he said, well, F off, Coughlin. I'm going to get John Tracy to run in your place. He'll do a much better job than you. So the next phone call that came in to me was from the great Noel Carroll, who was one of the founders of the charity Goal and one of the people who came up with the idea of bringing the four best Irish milers ever in the top 10 in the world. And Noel said, Eamon, you have to run. I said, Noel, I just ran a 10-mile jog. I'm not in any shape to run a sub-4-minute mile. I can't run. And he said, Eamon, it doesn't matter what kind of shape you're in. It will not be the same if we break the world record, that is, Ireland breaks the world record, and you're not in the team. Please, do me a favour, run. Just come and show up and run. So I agreed with Noel that I would do it. And in the next phone call, O'Shea came back to me and he said, well, Coughlin, he said, I'm glad to see that you're going to run on the A team. I'm going to put John Tracy on the B team in the first leg, and he's going to run the legs off you in the race.
Now, this is the same John O'Shea who managed to persuade people like John McEnroe to come to Dublin to play in the Goal tennis matches. You know, very persuasive. I know him well.
And this was this event he managed to get, I think he got Stephen Roach and Sean Kelly to do a cycle as part of it, a number of the Republic of Ireland footballers to do some bits as well. So
rumour has it that he actually challenged Mick McCarthy to a sprint outside Harrods in London the night before a match and crocked Mick's leg in the process.
Brilliant. Good stuff.
That'd be John himself sprinting to beat the band and still playing. I'm not sure if he's playing tennis, but he's certainly playing golf still. Now, when did the race happen?
So, August 17th, 1985, the night of the race rolled around. BLA, by the way, who are formerly what are now Irish Athletics, were not going to give them the permit for this. No way was it going to be official record. But as Coughlin explained, and he told me as well, that O'Shea managed to convince them. John O'Shea turns out a very convincing person, able to persuade anybody to do anything. So the night rolls around. John O'Shea's managed to coax 8,000 to 10,000 people down to Belfield to witness this event. And Coughlin goes first. He's pitted, as he mentions, against John Tracy on the B team. Manages a time of 4 minutes and 0.2 of a second, which is not the sub-4 that they maybe needed, but was definitely a really good start. And he said that it was very useful that he was first, given he was coming back from injury, because he had Tracy to kind of set the pace with him. He wasn't going to let Tracy beat him, basically. And Marcus O'Sullivan said afterwards that when you're in shape, it's easy. When you're not, and you're doing it on memory, on sheer will, you see the true character. Eamon was not walking away with an excuse that he couldn't get it done. He said it was one of the best performances he'd seen Coughlin put in. So O'Sullivan gets the baton then. He clocks 3 minutes 55.3 in the mile, hands it over to O'Mara, who clocks 3:56.6. So the record's in sight. Ray Flynn gets the baton for the final leg, crosses the line in 3:56.98 seconds. The time, 15 minutes 49.08, was 10 seconds faster than the previous record. They'd done it.
Is it ever run now? I mean, the record still stands for, 40 years on almost?
The record stands. World Athletics do not officially recognise it as an athletics world record because it's not an event that they have in competition, but it's still there. It is the world's best time for this. It's standing of almost 40 years on. I think Villanova got to within 3 seconds of it in April of last year, but it's still there and it's an amazing legacy. And O'Sullivan said, it's one of my proudest moments that night as a credit to our country and the sense of community that there was at the time. I just find it so interesting, Pat, that with the 14 strong Irish team competing at the World Relays in China this weekend, just relays themselves are a great opportunity for individual athletes to come and be part of a team. And I think as Irish people, there's something in our sporting culture that even when we're individuals, the rare time we get to be in a team, it feels special. All four of those runners say that they're still friends as a result of that. They never would have been had they not tried that attempt. So a really great story.
Now, while we have you here, Cameron, we should talk about the latest in the Skort saga. We know that for the Munster final in the Camogie, the women of Waterford and Cork were going to insist on wearing shorts, and we've had a development.
Yes, so the Camogie Association have announced that they'll call a special congress at Croke Park on the 22nd of May. So it had been thought that they might put this to a vote at next year's annual congress, which would be another year, but with the Cork and Waterford players, as you say, saying that they will wear shorts.
And they're not going to do like Dublin and Kilkenny did. They're not going to if the ref calls it off, it's off.
They're not going to change.
They're shorts or nothing.
Yeah, which is massive.
I should say shorts, but no skorts.
Absolutely. And it's a massive it's a massive moment for Waterford because they we had Niamh Rockett on Off the Ball yesterday saying that they've only been in two finals ever. They've only won silverware once.
So big sacrifice for them.
Huge. But they see that it's short-term pain for long-term gain and a benefit to all camogie players and women's athletes in this country.
Okay, so what's going to happen at the Munster final? I mean, given the promise of a meeting which doesn't predict its outcome, but they say they're listening to the women. So will they say, okay, for one last time, we'll wear the skorts on at the Munster final, or will they say no?
Well, that's the question. They said that it is their choice that they're going to wear shorts. They said it in a statement last night and were very definitive on it and unified on it. And as you say, there's no guarantee that this will go through. They did have a similar motion back in 2024 at Congress and it didn't go through. But the GPA have surveyed 83% would prefer to have that choice. So it seems like you'd have to feel that they will still go through it. And it's good to see that the Camogie Association have finally relented and are not sticking to protocol.
All right. Cameron Hill from Off the Ball. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.